Welcome, everyone, to episode 4 of The Bon Bon Show. Today is March 3rd, 2025. I am one of your hosts, Aaron. And I must say, it's very good to be back recording our little podcast here. Life's got a little bit busy over the last month, but we're back now and recording this show for you today. Speaking of today, our show will be full of giddiness as we chat about our first few hours of playing the recently released Monster Hunter Wilds.
Yay, Monster Hunter. Yes, Monster Hunter Wilds is back, and we wanted to talk about it a little. Whether you're a Monster Hunter Wilds fan or player, or just still learning about Monster Hunter games, we hope you will enjoy this episode. But hello there, our wonderful listeners, and hello to you too, Aaron.
Yo.
So in this episode 4, we're going to talk about Monster Hunter Wilds, how we've been enjoying it or not enjoying it. Is that even possible? over the first few hours, I'm a little bit more advanced in the game than Aaron is, but
yes,
we have opinions and we would like to share.
Yes, of course.
But before we get into that, let's do our regular thing. What have you been up to this past week, Aaron?
This past week has been busy, eventful. We just got back from Vancouver earlier in the week. Went to go visit some family there for a few days. So that was really, really fun. Vancouver at this time of year tends to be a bit gray and rainy, a little bit chilly, but still, you know, on the plus side of the Celsius temperature scale. Not yes. On the minus side, which is a bonus for us Albertans. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really fun, though. I honestly love rainy days and there's that aura. I really, really like it, but that's just me being weird, I suppose. We visited weird. Some family.
Absolutely not.
I'm a weird one. We ate a lot of Japanese food in Vancouver, which is tends to be a typical thing that we like to enjoy when we go there, just because the plethora of options and availability of different types of Japanese food is just in an abundance compared to where I live here in Edmonton. So I think I ate ramen 3 times. We did sushi twice, which included a anniversary dinner for my wife and I, where we went out to a Japanese restaurant where we treated ourselves to a nice
happy
sushi dinner there. Yes, thank you very much. It was 10 years, so a big milestone that we got to celebrate there, which was nice because we got to have Kai's uncle look after Kai for the evening. It was just, you know, Kai was already sleeping, but at least it's nice to have, you know, a babysitter close by to look after him while we went out for a nice dinner. What was the other Japanese place we went to? It was like a really cool onigiri breakfast place. That was a really, really tasty treat. If anyone's in Vancouver and wants to know where that place is or want some details, just ping me and I'll give you the secret. I'll give you the secret location of that place.
Ooh.
So our son had a blast playing with his uncles and seeing grandma and seeing some cousins. So that was really fun for him. And it was just nice to get away. I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I've been on paternity leave, which is actually ending today as of this recording.
No.
And I'm going back to work tomorrow. So I'm a little bit sad about that and the change in lifestyle that I have to go through now and going back to the regular work routine. But so that's been kind of the other side of this week, is just preparing for that change and just mentally getting ready for the next phase in life as our paternity and maternity leave is ending. And so both of us are going back to work, me full-time, my wife part-time, and just a change on how Kai will be looked after. So yeah, a little bit of sadness and I guess hopefulness for the future on my end, but overall just eager to keep on progressing and seeing what the future has in store for our family at least. That's my little life update there for this week. How about you, Kirk? What's been going on in your world over the last week or two?
Not as exciting as you, Mr. Traveling to Vancouver and eating Japanese food, but I guess I live in Japan. So I can have Koko Ichibanya, Kare Udon anytime I want.
You have access to all of the noodles for a very nice price.
It's funny though, because even though ramen ranks low on my list of favorites, I've been having a lot of ramen recently.
Yeah, I've been noticing the not so much the shade that you throw at the ramen, and yet all the time I see the ramen picks and know, ooh, I've eaten this udon, or ooh, I've eaten this soba. So I feel like your allegiance to the ramen is changing.
That will have to change as the place warms up and I can have the more versatile udon. But my week, this week, we've been away for a couple of weeks. Both of us had different things going on. A couple of weeks ago, I did my midterm presentation for my master's program, and that was really, really, really good. It also felt good to get that behind me. But in this past week, I had the opportunity to learn about Japanese tea ceremony. I attended a Japanese tea ceremony workshop in Hiroshima.
Tell me more.
Sado. Yeah, it's honestly, I had no interest in Japanese tea ceremonies before. Just like looking on, I thought it was, we'd say in Japanese, like mendokusai. I felt like, you know, it was very, you know, structured, and you had to sit a certain way, and you had to position your body and eat things in a particular order. Like, I don't do well in those types of settings, fortunately or unfortunately. So, but I think I mentioned before that I'm a Hiroshima study abroad ambassador, being a student in Hiroshima Prefecture. So I get the opportunity to have these experiences, and this is one of my favorite ones so far, because tea ceremonies actually are cool. I have a newfound appreciation. I've learned so much about, you know, the different tools, the why things are done a particular way. And now I understand more about the reasonings behind each process, the snacks. I still don't like sitting in the the way they want us to. I don't know. I feel like my legs are just long, and I don't know. I can't sit that way for very long. But overall, it was a really good experience. We had a really good, cool sensei who, you know, broke it down for us and explained everything. And she was just, it was like, I understand why like ninjas are a thing in Japan, because like, just the way her body moved, or you know, she mixed the tea, or, you know, like wiped the cups, and just, you know, navigated that small space with such elegance and stuff. I was like, okay, that's why people pay thousands of dollars for this type of experience. And here I am getting it for free.
Ooh.
So towards the end, she allowed us to try to mix the tea on our own. And I didn't do it again, but I volunteered as a taster.
Of course.
So I had a lot of matcha that day, but the snacks, just learning and expanding my horizons and having a new appreciation for tea ceremony, I just really liked. So yeah, my time as a Hiroshima study abroad ambassador actually ends this month. I have a ceremony and stuff next week or this weekend. I don't even know what day of the week it is. And yeah, that was my cool experience recently.
I gotta want to clarify on the sitting, because I've done the tea ceremony once as well, and I guess just for the listener, on the sitting, you're sitting on your legs essentially, like you're I don't even know what that that sitting position is called. There's definitely a name.
I think it is. Let me Google it real quick live while we're recording.
But I get what you're saying. It's not that it's not that comfortable, especially when you're not used to doing it, because of the weight of your body is kind of sitting on your lower half of your legs, I guess, from your like your knee down. I have the same problem as well. I can do it for a few minutes, but after that I'm like, okay, I need to stretch out my legs. I need any other posture, sitting position than the one that they want me to be in. So I remember struggling with that very same issue that you had as well. And how would you, from the tea perspective, how would you have rated the tea? I don't know if you drink matcha all that often, if you've compared it to other experiences you had, but how would you rate like the flavor and the taste and everything?
Quickly before I go into the tea stuff, like I googled it live. Come on, guys, we got this. So seiza is a traditional Japanese sitting posture where one kneels on the floor with their knees bent and buttocks resting on their heels while keeping their back straight and hands folded neatly on their lap. Oh my God, that's difficult. But at least I learned something. I learned the word seiza and I remembered it, which I'm happy about. Onwards to your question about matcha. Honestly, I don't like or dislike matcha. Some people I know go crazy for matcha, and there are matcha flavored everything you can think of here in Japan. I do like matcha ice cream. I think that's my favorite version of matcha. So yeah, I think the tea was good for what it is. It's not something that I'd be like, hey, I'm in the mood for some matcha tea today. Definitely not. But for the experience and learning about the history and how matcha is prepared and like different grades of matcha, and different uses for matcha, it was a good experience, good learning experience, and it tasted great. I had maybe three or four cups, and yeah,
Oh, you got to
I
drink a
was
lot.
going crazy. Yes,
Yeah, I think the
and the
time I did it,
snacks.
I only got to drink one cup. So the fact that you got to drink multiple ones is pretty sweet.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to share again about those snacks, like the snacks change depending on the season, and
Yes.
like it's a lot of them are like flower themed, so depending on what season it is, you get different tastes and flavors and colors. So we got like a more like a spring themed snack bit. I forget the name of the flowers now, but it was just like, wow, I can see why this is so, you know, like renowned and why it would be appealing to many people.
Yeah. Speaking of those mochi and those different snacks, I remember Kunitsugami really going out of its way to explain and showcase those different types of mochi and snacks that you would have in the tea ceremony. Like, I can't remember any of the names. I can visualize what they look like, but I thought that was a really cool part of the game, that just at the attention to detail, which I know is a little bit off topic, but it just you explaining the different types of snacks. I was like, there's a video game that actually shows you what those snacks are and gives you a background explanation of when you would eat those snacks and like the meaning behind why you would eat that one and what's the reasoning for it, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
So, yeah, so
Who says
much.
you can't learn anything from video games?
Exactly. Yeah, everything's has more deeper meaning in those types of ceremonies. It's not just we're eating this food because we felt like it today. It's more like we're eating this food because of the cultural significance of the seasoning or the time of year it is. And there's a reference to, a time of in the past of why that was applicable and why, maybe a particular yield was in season at that time. Whatever that might be, it's just really cool to see like how deep that particular snack goes, and it's not just, yeah, it's tasty and that's why we make it. It's way more than that, so that's really cool. So plug for Kunitsugami if you want to learn more about these Japanese tea snacks.
Yep, and we're 15 minutes into the episode and we
Yeah.
haven't started talking about Monster Hunter yet. I
Sounds
guess we're gonna have to
about
have
right.
a tea ceremony podcast episode if people want. Please hit us up and we can find out more, and I can share more deeply of my experiences, or you can also share
Oh,
about
yeah,
your
of
experience
course.
participating in the tea ceremony. Was it in Hokkaido or was it when you were traveling?
It was actually when I was visiting my wife when she was living in Japan in Ibaraki Prefecture. I had just been there at the right time, and her group was doing a tea ceremony, and I got to join in because I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. So, yeah,
Oh,
that was really,
lucky.
really cool. Very, very lucky.
Nice.
So let's get into the first question for today in regards to Monster Hunter Wilds.
Okay, let me
The
ask
first
you.
question, oh,
Let
you
me
want to
ask
ask
you.
me? Please.
Yes. So, Aaron, what's your biggest surprise so far playing Monster Hunter Wilds?
Yeah, for me, I think I'd have to say two things come to mind right now. considering I'm still early into the game and not, as Kirk had mentioned, not as far as he is. So my experience and my surprises might be a little bit different, or a little bit introductory compared to what my feelings might be if I played the game a little bit longer. But to start, I think the way that they integrated the story with the amount of action cutscenes, which just seems like way more, or maybe even not more, maybe longer, or way more, more detail and longer, and just the amount of action and effects and music going into them, seems really at a high level, just way more immersive. And the amount of character dialogue and the map exploration that takes place during the dialogue. So I find a lot of times you're not only just standing, kind of going through dialogue with the NPCs, but you're actually navigating the world at the same time. You're on your Sacred, which is your, I guess, mode of transportation. Looks kind of like a ostrich chocobo hybrid thing. So you'll jump on that, and at the same time you're talking with your NPCs and they're delivering, you know, backstory or action that should be, that you'll take place in, or, you know, where you should go. So you get to look around a lot, and it's not always, it's kind of on rails in terms of where you're going. You don't really have much control, but at least you can still look around and explore the environment for the first time. I think that part of that they've incorporated into the game is really, really cool. So I knew that the story was going to be a huge part of the game, but I didn't think that I would be playing Monster Hunter almost completely solo for so much of the early game. I know that there's ways that you can integrate the story missions with your friends by like sending out SOS flares, but I don't think it's the most seamless of integrations. But I think the way that the game is built right now, I'm almost inclined to just continue playing solo until I get to the end game. I love seeing the monsters for the first time and challenging the monsters by myself for the first time and taking the time to learn the ropes and learn the dance of what those move sets are and figuring out what works and what doesn't. So I've been enjoying taking my time, chatting with the NPCs, exploring the maps, and just messing around with the items and my hunter profile, and just doing everything on my own right now, and just being very casual with it. Considering we don't get a brand new Monster Hunter game very often, so I like taking it slow and just enjoying the process. Has been really exciting for me. And the second thing I just wanted to mention quickly is how little I touched the hunting horn during the beta tests. I was experimenting with a lot of other weapons, especially like the lance and sword and shield.
Yes, Team Lance, rise up.
Yes, let's go, Lance. But the hunting horn has been surprisingly the only weapon I've touched so far. It's much more involved compared to Monster Hunter Rise and is more akin to the Monster Hunter World variant. But it's really satisfying for me to string those notes together, to put down the echo bubble and complete combos and finish with my special performance. So I've just been in love with that weapon so much. But don't worry, Team Lance, I'll get to you eventually. But I want to make Hunting Horn my main weapon for sure. And reason being is I like when I start playing hunts with Kirk and friends in the squad, I really enjoy buffing them and supplying the support that they need to, you know, be successful in the hunt. So I think
appreciate your buffs.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I started Hunting Horn kind of right at the beginning and kind of worked my paces through it right from the very beginning. So those are my biggest surprises so far, because I would think I was going to not play the Hunting Horn from the beginning and start something different like the Lance. But I've just been enjoying it so much. So yeah, that's what's been so positive for me so far. What about you, Kirk? What's been one of the biggest surprises for you?
Oh, nice. I've got, I share the thoughts of you about the cutscenes. Like it's, you can tell that a lot of effort was put into making the Monster Hunter Wild story, you know, more immersive than it usually is. And I appreciate that. Some people have been like, oh, it's just a lame-ass story and stuff, but like I feel like I want to recognize the effort that the developers have put into the story this time. It can be a little clunky in terms of, as you've mentioned, the secret, the mode of transportation that you travel around. Sometimes it's a bit restrictive, but
Yeah.
when you see the cutscenes for the monsters and they kind of introduce themselves and then you like seamlessly get dropped right into the battle, right where their animation ended, it's just like wow, it's so immersive. So yeah, I agree with that. What I'm most impressed with though is like the variety of the monsters.
Yes.
I'm farther ahead. I've actually seen the crates. I've not finished the game, but I've played through the entire story, which Aaron is not very far behind me, but I don't want to spoil anything for him.
Yes, no spoilers, please.
But the variety of monsters, like previous Monster Hunter titles, I've played Tri, World, Rise, and now Wilds. So, like, I don't know, I feel I'm like an average Monster Hunter fan. I'm not hardcore, but I'm not like casual. And previous Monster Hunters had like a lot of dragons, you know what I mean? Like these dragon wing type, fire breathing type monsters. But from playing through the story of Wilds, I feel like there are no two monsters that I've fought so far that are like similar or like copy or paste or, you know, like similar in any way in my mind. You know what I mean?
For
Their
sure.
designs, their animations, why they exist, their background, their attacks are so varied. It really gives character to the monsters, whether you like or dislike Monster Hunter. Or not Monster Hunter, whether you like or dislike these monsters, now I feel like it's more personal. It's not because like, oh, I don't like this monster because of the fight. It's more like, you know, I don't like that monster because it ate my friend type of thing. But yeah, but back to the cutscenes, that's the second thing, you know, like the music, the showdowns, it feels like a scene from like Star Wars, like when you fight like Ark Veld, you know about Ark Veld, so that's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
It's like when Obi-Wan and what's his name? Anakin showed down in on Mustafar in Star Wars.
Classic.
Yeah, man, and Anakin is like, I hate you. And Obi-Wan is like, you were the chosen one. So like I'm Obi-Wan talking to Ark Veld. I'm like, Ark Veld, you were the chosen one. You were supposed to bring balance to the Monster Hunter world, not leave it in darkness. And then the music comes in and it's like, ah, and I'm like standing behind my shield with my lance, and I'm like, no, Ark Veld, don't let me kill you. Okay, fine, I'm getting to the point. But yeah, those immersive moments really make me just sit back after a session and I'm just like giggling to myself about all the fun I'm having. The music, the cutscenes, the immersion, the monsters, it's a very good stew to suck in the players.
Yeah, that transition from the cutscenes, especially when you do the monster intro and you see them like, you know, what, get angry and they're chasing you or they're interacting with another monster and then they notice you or whatever that is, and then it just seamlessly transitions to your hunter and you're like right in front of the monster and it's like, you know, the guild commissions you to take down this monster or whatever they say, and you're just like, holy smoke, like we're going at it right now. Like that's
Exactly.
never happened before. It was always like, okay, just accept this quest and then you load into the quest and you just chase the monster, but this time it's just like you were there right now and it's just that immersion is just to the next level, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and whatever your character is wearing, you know, like it doesn't matter what kind of gear you're wearing, what weapon you're using, it seamlessly incorporates your character into the cutscenes, even at like
Yes.
the high quality. So you it's not like you're some silent protagonist that's in the same clothes all the time, even though you're wearing something completely different in game. Whatever gear of the
Yes.
dozens of gear available in the video game, once you are in a cutscene, it's your character in any way that you customize them, and that makes such a huge difference as well.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I noticed that right away, and I was like, That's super cool. Because you, yeah, kind of like past games, you would just expect the default character look or whatever to be in those cutscenes. But the fact that every detail that you've customized on your character, armor, face, hair, whatever, is in those
Tattoos, everything.
cutscenes. Yeah, it's, yeah, there was like no expense spared in making sure that it was like a fully immersive experience. So
Yeah.
yeah, that was a good call out.
All right, let's move on. What's one change you'd like to see come in a future update or patch for Monster Hunter Wilds?
Yeah, I think I know there's some updates coming already, but I think the biggest kind of barrier that I've even talked to some other people about, or that I've been hearing about from some friends, is just getting in the same digital space with your squad or some of your friends. So I feel like there's a number of hoops to go through in order to get there, and I feel like it's a bit too many steps at this point for me and for a lot of others. And I understand where Capcom is going in terms of, you know, the environment link and being able to jump into the map with other hunters, or the squad lobbies and the link parties, but there's so many different new terms and just all the layers. And I think it's just been creating a bit of disconnect for people that are have been used to, like, oh, I just go into the gathering hub and I just see everyone that I expect to see in the lobby, and it's not so cut and dry at this point. So right now, when you want to, you know, when we've created a squad with one another, and when we join the squad lobby, you know, we don't actually get put in the same space as each other. We're still in our own instance, so we have to go through an additional step to create a link party. You have to send the invite. The other person's got to get that invite. They got to find that invite. They got to, you know, accept it, and then they load in, and then you can finally see each other. And then, like I mentioned, there's the environment link party on top of that if you wanted to do the hunting in the world seamlessly with one another without the quests type. And I won't get into the details on all of that, but as you can kind of hear from that explanation, there's a lot of layers to create a, you know, the social experience that you might have been used to in Monster Hunter Rise, or even in Monster Hunter World. And it's Monster Hunter's never been an easy game to kind of just get into with your friends in terms of being in that same digital space. It's kind of always been a little bit complicated, and it's something that players just kind of grow to love. But it's not, when you come from different games where you just quickly hit like a button and you're within the same group as one another, it can be a little bit jarring. So I do know that there's an upcoming free title update, and that's supposed to include a gathering hub. And so I hope that addresses the issue by allowing squad lobbies to just form directly into that gathering hub, or at least have an option to do that. And so if I join our squad lobby, it would just put us in the gathering hub. And then if Kirk joins it, then he automatically gets put in that gathering hub too. And then we can just start seeing each other right away without going through those additional hoops. So we don't know exactly what that experience is going to look like, but I hope there's some refinement to that particular process. And kind of like I said, I just hope that it's made a little bit easier, because the people I've talked to already feel a little bit overwhelmed, especially if they're new to Monster Hunter or they haven't played the series for a while. They're kind of like, I need to go to this menu, and then I need to join this lobby, and then I need to, you know, accept an invite. Like, it's just for a new player, it's like I kind of had mentioned, it seems to be a little bit too much. And I think people will get used to it. It's just from a user experience pro issue, it's, or from a usability standpoint, it's like, do you want to have users go through that, or could you find some ways to make it a little bit easier? And, you know, being more on the veteran side, like you and I are, it's like, yeah, it's fine. We'll deal with it. But I feel like that can be an issue where some people might just go, you know what, I'll play solo, and then they just kind of leave the game. And then, you know, multiplayer, I don't think will ever dry up, but it's a shame that some people would eventually leave the game because some aspects like joining lobbies or playing with your friends becomes a little bit more complicated than what you maybe envisioned it to be. So that's kind of the one issue I have right now, within my early playtime. What about you, Kirk? Is same thing, or what, did you have anything else?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of what you said is exactly how I feel. Especially when you said about like the multiplayer aspects of things is what gives Monster Hunter, that longevity. So once
Mm-hmm.
you're done with the story, it's all about hunting with your friends. And if hunting with your friends is this long, convoluted, complicated process in the beginning, it might turn you off from engaging with the
Yeah.
multiplayer. I know from my experience, Monster Hunter Tri was the first one I played on the Wii, and I knew no one else that played Monster Hunter. And I played that game solo for a while, but if I had the opportunity to play with more people, I probably would have played it for two, three times as long. And multiplayer is a big part of Monster Hunter, being in the gathering hub, chatting with your friends, hunting monsters, trying new weapons, teaching your friends about weapons that you are not familiar with. I'd want to learn more about the hunting horn, and I'd want to teach you about the lance. But like when we are in the game together, it's so much easier than like watching some guide or explaining by a voice. And there's a lot of like antics that goes on in the gathering hub and in multiplayer, and it's just like all kinds of emotes and stickers. It's just a vibe,
Yeah.
doing it in a
The
group
social
setting. But
aspect is. Oh, sorry.
so yeah, Monster Hunter Wilds has a lot of jank as it relates to multiplayer. And Monster Hunter as a series is kind of known for jank, but it's always been so cute, and personally it's almost part of the package now. But yeah, they need to sort multiplayer out. There is, as you said, link parties, environmental links, there's squad, there's flares, there's following someone, friending someone. There's like so many different, like the communication tab, I think it's called, is just so complicated. Like I couldn't find how to search for someone to add them as a friend. It was just not intuitive. And once you find it out, you're like, oh, it's right there. But like to find it in like Monster Hunter menu is complicated. Like it's menus within menus within menus. So yeah,
Yeah, at
that's
this
what I've
point, it's like,
experienced.
how do they even make it more simple? Like, making things simple, I feel like, is harder than how they've gone and done it, because it's just like, oh, we want to do this and we want to do this, and let's give the player this option and this option and this option. It's really cool to be given that many choices, but sometimes it creates menus and layers that just provide hindrances to those options and those types of enjoyment. So it's kind of like a catch-22 where you give so much option that it creates a convoluted process and system to even interact with it in the first place, right?
Yeah,
So,
just let me easily add people to my friends list, and once I'm on and I see my friends playing, just let me join them. If we're in like a guild slash, I think they call it squads in this game, once I log into the squad instance, let me see my other squad mates. You know what I mean? Maybe it will change later in the game when everyone has finished the story and we're all like at the same point hunting monsters, but it's still important at that in this early stage to be able to see my buddy playing and be like, hey, Aaron is fighting X monster, let me pop in with him. Like I'm gonna have to contact him, and luckily we have like Discord and stuff, so it's easily. Can you imagine if we didn't have Discord and we had to figure this stuff out, or we didn't communicate or have established gaming groups? I can't imagine a new Monster Hunter player or someone without gamer pals explaining how this stuff works.
Different Discords I'm on, you can see people struggling, and you see the veterans pop up and providing explanations and even just notes like, okay, this is a lot to type out. Let's just jump on a call and I'll walk you through the menus and how to do stuff. So, like, that's where we're at with Monster Hunter. And like you said, it's expected Monster Hunter jank, and we just learn to grow with it. But it is a daunting thing for new players to come into. And I think it's gotten better over time, but it's still not at a place where, like, most gamers are familiar with or not familiar with that type of jank, because most games are very like, you play it, you join online, and then you're just playing so fast. Whereas in this game, it's you need to give it a more time.
Yep.
But
So
yeah,
yeah.
that's why we live Monster Hunter.
Yes. Even the jank is attractive in a weird
Exactly.
way. But yeah, next question. I know it's early days yet.
Yeah.
Even though I've seen the credits, apparently I haven't fought all the monsters in the video game yet.
Ooh.
But so far, what monster fight has you most giddy with joy every time you face said monster, Aaron?
Yes. I've got to the third map. I think I know there's at least four. I don't know if there's more than that, but I've gotten to the third one, which is the oil. Is it the oil well? And then I've experienced the Scarlet Forest, and then there's the Windward Plains. So I think out of the three maps so far, I've enjoyed the Scarlet Forest the most. And then that's where we find the monster that I've enjoyed fighting the most. And I think the most I've fought any monsters so far in the full
Toby the
game is.
Gotta
Yeah, Tobi Kadachi's in the game, everyone. Just kidding. He's not. Or at least I don't think he is. So I think I've only fought each monster like two times. Maybe I've fought in the odd one three times. But so far, my first impression of my favorite monster to fight at this point would be Uthduna. I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's a monster you find in the Scarlet Forests, more in like the bigger water type zones in the forest. She's got like a cool mechanic where she has like a protective water veil that kind of lowers your damage done, and you kind of have to remove that water veil. But in doing so, once that water veil is removed, she becomes a lot more agile. She can kind of almost like float in the sky a little bit, land really heavily, send waves. Kind of like a lot of surprise attacks that I wasn't expecting, and kind of like what Kirk was mentioning before with the monster variety and the move sets variety is stuff we haven't really seen before. And this one really caught my attention, and just like I've carded the most against this monster compared to any other
Noob.
monster. So yeah, this is my new monster. So I just found the mechanics kind of like a breath of fresh air. I found it the most challenging fight for me so far. And it's given me the most hardest time as my low rank status, because I'm currently a low rank hunter, in the game currently. So that's the one that I've had fun with. I think the only downside is when I look at the armor set, I only can see, I think, the greaves and the waist. And those two pieces to me are like, I'm not so keen on the design of that set. We'll see what the helmet and the chest piece and the arm piece
The
looks like
boots.
once I unlock that. Maybe my opinion of her armor set will change, but at this point, I think I like the monster and the fight, but the armor, I'm like, it might be a pass unless I need the stats or the perks of it. I haven't looked at the weapons yet. I don't even know if I've unlocked her weapons yet, at least not on the hunting horn side. So there's probably still some pieces and parts that I need to get before I start unlocking views to other hunting horns. But that was the only downside to the monster I have so far. It's just the armor design is just not my cup of tea, but maybe that will change. But yeah, Uthduna is my favorite so far. Kirk, who's yours? I think I know, but let's see if I'm correct.
Let me throw a little shade on your Ulfduna. I did not like
What?
that
Oh my, come on, man.
I think I fought them once, and
Aw.
I was like, I hearing you explain about like the water armor and like the transition of the fight. I guess it's cool.
I
I don't know.
guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's not bad. It's not bad. But we all know who the best experience so far is. My dear Lalabarina.
Rolls off the tongue
So
so nicely.
yes, Lalabarina is this new spider monster that I just absolutely fell in love with. And it's strange because usually I hate spiders in real life and in video games. Like I actually thought about turning on the arachnophobia option, which this game has, by the way,
Yes.
because I don't do spiders. I'm not scared of them per se. It's just they, I don't know, they give me the literal creepy crawlies. It feels like they're under my skin. I don't like them
Yeah.
alive. I don't like them dead. I don't want to touch them. I don't want to see them. And it's funny, back to Japan. Japan has some very ginormous spiders and insects as a whole.
Yes, it
But
does.
yeah. But my dear Lalabarina is the best spider ever. I was entranced by her
Ooh.
movements. She has this beautiful kind of like scarlet red coloration, and she just moves like a spider. I've fought spiders in Monster Hunter before, but her movements and just how she, climbs and maneuvers through the environment is just so, I don't know, spider-like. She has her own little lair, and how she was introduced in the story, I was like, oh my God, I think I'm in love. So I crafted a lance from her monster parts because I'm more concerned about the weapons more so than the armor, as Aaron is. But her lance, it provides paralysis.
Oh, okay,
So
that makes sense.
yeah, so whenever I'm fighting the monsters after her, I use her lance to kind of paralyze them, which makes them unable to move for a couple of seconds, so you can get some big damage in. And yeah, that has been one of my primary weapons that I've used all the way through story mode. So like I've literally been taking a little piece of Lullaberina with me throughout most of the story mode. It might be because I killed a few of them, but it's Monster Hunter,
A
not Monster
few.
Lover for a reason.
Yeah. When's the wedding date? When do you set the day of, your togetherness forever with Lullaberina?
Lullaberina decides my life, so I let her decide. She does have this giant stake that protrudes from her abdomen, but
Yeah.
it's we'll figure it out together.
I remember that first time I fought her, I was like, why am I losing my life so much? Like I would do some damage and I was like, why is my life going down? I was constantly like, what is happening here? And yeah, I had to figure out quickly what was going on. But I liked her when she turns into like a flower when she turns around and she's got like that rose kind of look to her. And yeah, it's of like a very like beautiful, dangerous monster, right? It's like it
Yeah, you're
looks
like,
very like
wow, that
alluring.
coloration. Let me go take a closer look at that. Oh, I'm dead.
Oh, what is that? And then you're turned into spider lunch very, very quickly, as one of the characters almost found himself to be in. So yeah, that's a good pick. I think I need to fight the armor set for that one is really, really cool. I think the female one's definitely looks cooler than the male one. It's got that very like, I don't know, fancy kind of pretty design to a dress,
Very
very floral.
flowy,
Yeah. So I think I'll probably end up crafting some of that armor set. But yeah, I haven't really crafted too much in the way of armor so far, but I probably should get on that. But Lullabrina, that's a very, very good choice. Very unique monster.
It
Fits in with the series well.
took me just over 20 hours to complete the story, but I definitely took the time to craft armor like every maybe new region I'd enter. I would
Okay.
like try my best to fight the monster from the previous region, the strongest one, and then craft their armor. And like I didn't know much about the monsters until I fought them, but like if I'm in a fire area as you are now, I think it would be make sense for me to f craft some kind of armor that's resistant to fire just in
Yep.
case I fight something that tries to set me on fire. So
Exactly.
yeah, that type of thing. So by the end of the game, I was, wearing some really good armor. And yeah, I'd encourage you to keep your armor topped up each time you enter a new area, using like armor spheres, not just to craft new armor, but to upgrade existing armor.
Armor spheres on low rank gear. I don't know, man.
You'd be
I don't know
surprised.
about that. But that was our kind of initial early impression of Monster Hunter Wilds. I'm sure we'll be back to talk about the game again once we've got more into the end game and experienced what Capcom has in store for us, not only in the end game, but the additional title updates that will happen throughout the year, and then the inevitable G rank, Master rank expansion that will happen who knows when. So this is not the end of us talking about Monster Hunter Wilds for sure, but it was nice to kind of geek out a little bit and talk about our initial impressions because it's such a wonderful, well-built game outside of some of the performance issues we hear about on PC, but we will not get into that right now
Yes, that's for
for
later.
another day. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was really fun to chat about Monster Hunter Wilds with you today.
Yep. And if you've listened this far, it probably means that you are a Monster Hunter fan. So I'm going to leave our squad code, the Dodo Gamma Defenders squad code, in the description on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, iTunes, wherever you're listening to this. I'll be sure to make sure it is in all of them. So if you are playing Monster Hunter Wilds, you can enter that code if you can figure out how to add it. Probably need to add instructions. And yeah, you can join us when Aaron and I are playing, or when our other friends are on. We can just, you know, have fun with this game. And yeah, thank you for listening to episode 4 of the Bonbon Show. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. Dodo Gamma Defenders, rise up!
Rise up! Let's go! Ooh.